Secretary of State Nelly Gorbea, welcome back to the Publix Radio.
Hi, Ian.
You were mentioned by a lot of people earlier this week when Congressman Jim Langevin announced that he would not be seeking re-election. Rhode Island has never elected a Democratic woman as a member of Congress, and the thinking was that you could have been the person to be that historic candidate. You quickly ruled yourself out. How come?
You know, I want to start by saying that I'm incredibly grateful for Congressman Langevin's service to our state, and I hope that he does well in his next stage. You know, I was very flattered when my name came up as a candidate for that seat, and it was interesting. There were a ton of people who reached out to me to encourage me, and I was flattered because it shows that they believe in my leadership. But I promised Rhode Islanders that I was committed to being their next governor, and the moment that Rhode Island is in right now really requires someone with my proven leadership qualities, someone who can bring a diversity of people together to work for the future of the state. And I really believe that my leadership style fits better in an executive position like governor than in the legislative branch right now. You know, I'm not a career politician. I'm really doing this because I believe I can do the best job for our state.
You're one of five Democrats running against Governor Dan McKee. Governor McKee has the benefit of serving at a time when Rhode Island has a really good budget outlook, due in significant part to tons of federal COVID relief that have been flowing into the state. How do you overcome the advantages that he has while at the same time differentiating yourself from the five other Democrats in the race?
It's actually not that hard to do because, unfortunately, what we've seen with the governor is that he's had a really hard time executing his office, you know, with leadership and in a way that's transparent and accountable to the people. You know, yes, he's going to have a lot of money coming in right now, but, you know, can he actually implement it in the best possible way, effectively and with no corruption? I don't know. I actually don't think that his track record shows that he can do that. With regards to the other candidates, you know, I am the one candidate that actually has experience with connecting across the silos. We are all going to have plans for very similar things. We all believe that, you know, absolutely the economy needs to be more equitable and just, that we need to address the affordability of housing, that education needs to be improved in our state, and that we need to address climate change, both the opportunities that renewable energy presents, but also making sure that we're resilient for the climate change. But I have experience from my time as a leader in the nonprofit sector and as Secretary of State, where I've connected people differently across those silos to make sure that we really set the state in a different path.
Well, it seems that so far, Governor McKee has the stage pretty much to himself, and neither you or the other Democrats challenging Governor McKee have really broken through and made a big impression on the voting public. Is that going to change at some time in the near future?
Actually, I'm going to have to resend you our polling memo from the end of last year, where actually it showed quite the contrary. It showed that I'm actually statistically tied with the governor. I'm the only one of the challengers that's statistically tied.
Well, we should point out that poll was conducted by your campaign, and your campaign did not release the full details of that poll. If you'd like to make the full details available, I'd be happy to receive those.
It was also credited by the McKee's campaign as being accurate. And also, there was nobody else who actually stepped up and said that it wasn't. So, you know, it's funny, the world of politics is such that a lot of times you read between the lines. And I feel very certain not just from the poll, but from how I've been talking with people and how they've been relating to the candidacy, that I am the leading challenger right now to the governor.
One more question about Governor McKee. He is unveiling his budget proposal this week. He says his priorities include housing, behavioral health care, small business development, and the environment. Do you agree that those are good priorities for Rhode Island?
Those are all great priorities for the state. The challenge is who can actually execute, who can be the leader of the state and make sure that those one-time set of monies coming in from the federal monies and also our existing general funds are invested in a way that really gets us to a different place as a community. That I don't think we see anything. For example, in housing, We all believe that there should be more affordable housing in the state. Back 14 years ago, when I was executive director of Housing Work, we argued that housing should be part of the budget. And now here it is. At that time, when we were arguing that, Governor McKee was then a mayor of the town of Cumberland. And I didn't see anything in the, in his leadership at the time that really made affordable housing a stellar issue for him as a mayor. And so I haven't seen anything as a governor that proves it otherwise.
Last year, a series of bills were introduced in the General Assembly that supporters say would have modernized elections in the state. None of those measures passed. What is your explanation for that?
We were really in a very strong position because of our investments in cybersecurity and our investments in our local election officials, as well as in our state officials in terms of their training. So that by the time we got to the pandemic, a record number of Rhode Islanders, 521,000 of them, were able to vote safely and securely in three ways: mailing their ballots from home, making sure that they did early in-person voting, and or voted on election day. You know, so we've done a lot. Yes, there's more to be done. And these things always take a little bit of time. I'm hopeful that in this session, we will be able to tackle some of these lasting improvements that we absolutely need to get done. Like, for example, getting rid of the two signatures on the oath envelopes. Change sometimes comes a little bit slower than one would like. But I'm proud of my record as Secretary of State and Chief State Election Officials. And I'm grateful to all of the Rhode Islanders who stopped me on the street and just thanked me. Because we've made voting more accessible and more secure.
Election officials across the country are facing death threats, conspiracy theories, and legal penalties just for doing their jobs. What should be done about that?
You know, it's very troubling to me that our elected leaders, no matter what your political background are under threat. And I hear it from secretaries of state and others in other jurisdictions. We have to, as leaders, take it upon ourselves to have more civil conversations. And I think, you know, we need to turn the volume down a little bit in terms of demonizing the others. It's okay to spar, and it's okay to have differences of opinions in how we get things done. That's what a campaign is all about. But I think that, you know, making sure that we have a civic space to exchange opinions, and also that we educate our children in how to have responsible debates, there's no silver bullet in this. We just need to work at it every single day.
Well, some people are trying to work at it, and nonetheless, there's a significant percentage of Republican voters across the country who believe this big lie that former President Trump, somehow the election was snatched from his grasp in 2020. How do we as a country move past that? I mean, there's ample coverage of the facts of the situation, and nonetheless, a lot of Republicans still believe this.
You know, and in our country, people can believe whatever they want to believe, but we have to continue to do our work as leaders to make sure that the public understands and we communicate the security that we have. I feel very good about the fact that in Rhode Island, the vast majority of Rhode Islanders absolutely feel very good about the security and the accuracy of our elections. And, you know, so what we need to do is to make sure that we elect people into these positions that continue to communicate and continue to do a good job for the people of Rhode Island and for our country.
One other related question. It's been reported on how supporters of President Trump in other states have taken steps to try to make the battlefield more softer for President Trump if he runs again in 2024. The possibility is that partisan elected officials could settle the vote in some states rather than the voters. What should be done about this, and how concerned are you about it?
We need to make sure that we defend our democracy. The structures that we have in place by nonpartisan election officials being the ones who run elections is key to be able to defend our democracy. I was very disappointed this week when, you know, the U.S. Senate was not able to pass the voting rights bills that were before them. I'm very troubled by the work that's being done in some states to militarize the security of elections and to put partisan people in those positions of having to do the vote count and everything. And we need to combat that every step of the way. We cannot just, you know, I know that we didn't pass the voting rights bills. Now we're going to have to, you know, continue to argue and fight in every single jurisdiction so that we as a country protect our democracy.
The state Republican Party this week filed an Open Meetings Act violation against the General Assembly relative to redistricting. Do you believe the General Assembly should be subject to the Open Meetings Act?
I think that the Open Meetings Act is a really important piece of legislation, and I would welcome them joining in absolutely as part of that. Transparency in government and in the processes of government is always a good thing.
There's a big proposal now for Rhode Island's two largest hospital groups, Lifespan and Care New England, to merge and form an academic health system with Brown University. There are some strong opinions on both sides of that issue. Do you support that merger proposal?
You know, the devil is in the details in all of this. We have to make sure that we secure these facilities for the health of our state and for our Rhode Islanders. I'd like to see some protections for the people who work at the hospital and for the people who are going to be served, so that, because when creating one, a system can have some benefits of size, it can also have a monopolistic kind of situation as well. I'm encouraged by the fact that the Brown Medical School is going to hopefully be a part of this new system. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but we have to make sure that there are protections for the workers and the population overall that's going to be using the system, for the businesses that are going to be paying, you know, the insurance that's going to help support all of this. And so that's the conversation that's happening right now that's so important to make sure that we protect Rhode Islanders going forward.
Now that the state has a very good budget outlook, legislative leaders have signaled that they do not support raising the state tax on upper income Rhode Islanders, people who earn north of, say, $450,000 a year. Progressives say this is a matter of fairness and that affluent people should pay more in taxes. Would you support raising taxes on upper income Rhode Islanders at that income threshold?
Look, my wanting to have a tax policy is one that's absolutely fair. Yes, people who are wealthy should pay more than people who are not wealthy. That's key. But we have a lot of work to do in our government to make sure that we use those taxes effectively. And as governor, that's where my main focus is going to be. How do we restructure government more effectively, more efficiently, so that it's serving people and is able to do the most out of the money that we are already able to spend, both from the federal largesse and from the general fund. Once we reorganize things, then we can definitely take a look at what other monies need to be taxed in order to have the government that Rhode Islanders need.
So if we understand you correctly, at this time, you do not support a increase in taxes on Rhode Islanders who earn, say, over $450,000 a year. Is that correct?
I just want to have my focus be on reorganizing things and making sure that we're effectively using the monies. Once we do that, I'm absolutely happy to look at tax policy, whether it can be increased or whether it should be cut.
You're not answering the question, really.
Yes, I am. My focus on taxes is going to be to use what we have right now.
Secretary of State and Democratic candidate for governor, Nelly Gorbea, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ian.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.